the best of company throughout the night. Overnights with Rod Quinn on ABC Local Radio.
What do you know about the milk that you drink? You might feed it to your kids. You might have it in your tea or coffee every day. You might cook with it, of course. How did you feel when you went into the supermarket and all of a sudden there were brands of milk proudly proclaiming on their label, permeate free? Now, this was something I'd never heard of, permeate. But it sounds sinister, doesn't it? Hang on a minute. These ones are permeate free. These other milks, generally cheaper, have permeate in them. Well, I don't want permeate in my milk, do I? That sounds... ugh. Permeate. It sounds artificial. Well, anyway, we're here at the ABC, and indeed at the Overnights program. We're very lucky, because right next to us is the Country Hour. And we just said, hey, Country Hour, what's the story with permeate? Well, about 3 hours later, I was still none the wiser, but I found out there was a lot more to milk production and permeate in particular than I had expected. So I thought, why not talk about it this morning? There must be many, many things that people want to know about their milk production. So in just a moment, one of Australia's leading milk producers will tell us all about it, including the vexed issue of permeate. All that and so much more. All your questions answered this morning on Overnights. Why is the milk permeate-free only now? I mean, I've been drinking milk for, 40 years, and there's no mention of permeate before the last six months. Were they adding it to my milk before that? Or you might be thinking, if permeate is a part of milk when it comes out of a cow, why are we taking it out at all? Why is it permeate-free when it seems to operate perfectly well with the permeate in it? Now, we asked the team at the Country Hour about permeate and realised just how much we didn't know about milk and how it's produced. So it's time to talk dairy. Lynn Strong is a dairy farmer at Clover Hill Dairies at Jamboree near Wollongong, or certainly in the south of New South Wales. And hopefully she can clear up some of these questions and give us an insight into this product, which most of us consume every day. And I presume that most of us take for granted. Lynn, a very good morning and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Rod.
You'd be getting up round about now, don't you, to milk the cows?
Yes, all good dairy farmers get up to milk their cows at least twice a day, which usually means somewhere between a 3 a.m. and a 4 a.m. start.
Gosh. And you never get a day off, I suppose. I mean, cows need to be milked every day of the year.
Oh, well, cows certainly need to be milked every day of the year. But farmers these days, for example, we employ 8 people on our farm, so that certainly allows us to have some time off.
Okay. How is the milk business at the moment?
It's pretty tough at the present moment. The supermarket milk wars are really putting a lot of downward pressures on farmers. We've got farmers in New South Wales, for example, who supply the major processor Lion, getting anywhere from 0 to 95% of their milk away at prices as low as 10 cents a litre. So it's tough.
10 cents a litre, and yet some people, well, in supermarkets, you might pay $1 a litre, you might pay $2 a litre, or even more than that.
That's exactly right.
And the producer gets 10 cents, if they're lucky.
Pretty hard, yeah, if they're lucky. It's pretty hard to balance the farm budget on farm gate prices like that.
It is a loss leader for those supermarkets, isn't it? They know, apparently, there are two products, eggs and milk, that if you get people in to buy that and they think that those products are cheap, they think the whole supermarket is not as expensive as the competitor. So this, I suppose, gets people in. Do they care what happens to the producer?
Look, people do care. They really do care. I spend a lot of time engaging with the community in our business. People genuinely care. They really do. It's just, look, it's quite a bit different in Australia. What people do, what they say they would like to do and what they actually do. So, for example, if you're looking at environmentally friendly purchases, 93% of people say that they would like to make environmentally free purchases. But when you look in people's trolleys, it's only about 13%. So yeah. For Australian consumers, it's all about cost and convenience. Milk, as you say, I'm very proud to produce, is such a wonderful staple that people feel that they must have in their refrigerator. And smart supermarkets, they put it right down the back of the supermarket and people have to walk past everything else. So they've got the capacity to make up that loss leader, you know, with those other purchases through the supermarket.
There are so many things I want to talk to you about, but that's an example. I mean, you know, the fact that the milk is down the back and means you've got to walk past everything else. And we know that that's just something that supermarkets do, and good luck to them for doing it, because it increases their profits, and that's fine. However, I don't know anything about permeate, except of what the people in the country hour have told me. And I'm no longer as concerned about it after I spoke to them as before. But it seems as though when all of a sudden that huge price war in supermarkets occurred, so that we're getting $1 a litre for our milk, and most people buy the 2-litre container, you can pick that up for $2, that the other brands, the name brands, I suppose, rather than the Colesworth brands, suddenly had to come up with something to encourage people to go back to their brands, and all of a sudden the permeate free appeared on their labels. Is that unfair to say?
Well, yes, and well, not. No, you're quite right there. It's become a point of difference for the major processors to try and claw back market share. And you can understand that they want to claw back market share for their branded milks. When you look at something like Coles home brand milk, now takes up 51% of their whole milk sales compared to 25% in the year 2000. So that's pretty frightening. Look, and I'd love to explain. I'm like the majority of Australia. In 2000, I'd never heard of permeate either. And it is a complex story to tell. So I'd love to share that. I've become an expert on permeate myself over the last 10 years, so I'm very happy to share that with the listeners.
Okay, and I'll get to that right now, but I just say, you're saying that this happened like 10 years ago. I've only seen the permeate stickers on the labels in the last, you know, what, 6 months, a year or so?
Yes, and this is exactly right. So so milk by law has to be standardised. So if the packaging says that milk, and in Australia the standard is on milk packaging, that milk must contain 3.2% of fat, right, and 3% of protein. And how we standardise that, because what happens on farm is fat and protein levels vary quite significantly throughout the year. And so the code allows manufacturers to add or withdraw milk components to standardise the composition of milk. And
okay, so now we're talking about permeate. This is how the permeate situation has evolved.
This is how the permeate situation has evolved. Now, there's two ways that processors can actually do that. They can add or withdraw cream, or they can add or withdraw this thing that they name permeate.
Who named it permeate? Where did it come from?
Well, permeate isn't just a name for a byproduct of milk. So okay. Permeate is a name for anything that passes through a filter. So, for example, this morning I got up and made myself an espresso.
Right.
So when you push water through coffee granules, through that very fine filter, you get a combination of water and coffee that comes out the bottom. You could label that permeate.
Okay, all right. Okay, so when the milk comes out of the cow, it's got permeate in it.
Yes, so it's got the same ingredients, which are lactose, minerals, you know, really important minerals like calcium, soluble proteins. There's some very impressive soluble proteins that end up in permeate, lactose, and of course water. So that's what it is. So of course all of those ingredients are milk. We're extracting ingredients that are in milk. And why that happens is, so the milk that's actually in your carton, none of those ingredients have ever been taken in or out.
Right.
So where the permeate comes from, for example, is milk is made up of a whole heap of wonderful goodies.
Yes.
And say you're making cheese, for example. Camembert requires different ratios of fat and protein to hard cheeses.
Right.
So if you're a company like, say, Warrnambool Cheese and Butter, whose area of expertise is making superb cheeses, or if you're a company like Bega, whose area of expertise is making superb cheeses, what you can do is you can take a portion of milk, so you might have a vat of milk that you're actually putting through the ultrafiltration process, and you end up with the fat and protein in the top of the filter. They give that a name called retinate. No, nobody's ever heard of that either. And what comes out the bottom is the permeate.
Right.
They use the retinate to get the right fat and protein ratios in their cheese, and they're left over with this product called permeate.
And what do they do with the permeate?
So by the food standards of Australia, it's perfectly legal then to use that to standardise milk. And of course, you know, they have a product left over. So in their particular case, they might sell it to another large processor.
And then it goes back in the milk.
And they'll put it back in the milk to standardise the milk.
So is there any difference, or what is the main difference between that kind of milk and milk that's been labelled permeate-free?
It's been labelled permeate-free because permeate hasn't been added in to standardise it.
But the permeate is taken out in the first place?
Not out of that milk.
Okay.
Not out of the milk that goes into the carton. It's just, it is exactly as you said, it's a point of difference. It's a point of difference to claw back the market share. So you look, it was...
To me, it's almost like having eggs barn-laid or free-range. I mean, I don't agree with the way that cage eggs, cage hens are treated to produce their eggs. But you have that point of difference. If people want to feel better about the way they eat their eggs or buy their eggs, they can choose to have barn-laid or whatever, free-range. Is that the same with the milk?
Well, look, that's obviously an animal health issue.
Sure.
That people are buying, that they're making.
But the milk is not healthier or less healthy if it's permeate-free or has permeate in it.
No, and the reason why this has come about is that, programs like A Current Affair and Today Tonight,
yeah,
who are relying on ratings, the best thing that they can do, the thing that generates ratings, is food controversy stories.
Yeah.
So it is basically, this has been generated out of those types of shows where every now and then they'd haul out a permeate story.
Okay.
And then that became a point of difference for the small boutique process.
Right. However,
what
I've noticed about, the sort of Coldsworth brands appear to have permeate in it. That's one thing. The others, you can't buy, whether it be dairy farms or whatever, non-permeate-free milk now. It's all permeate-free. Would that be right?
It's labelled. Those milks are labelled, yeah, permeate-free.
So are you saying that they're not necessarily permeate-free?
Oh, they're definitely not being standardised using separate permeate from other milk processes. So you've got, look, it is just a label. For example, all of the small boutique processors have never, ever used permeate to standardise their milk.
Okay.
It's always been standardised by adding or taking out cream.
Okay.
So you would have seen, and often in very small labels, like the difference that they did is they just put a very, very tiny label on their milk to say it was.
Okay, so how does, and this comes from Alison on our text, which is 0467 922 702, how milk that doesn't have permeate added is standardised? How is that standardised?
It's standardised by adjusting the cream process, the cream in the milk. So what happens is the cream, as you know, settles to the top. It's a very, very rich product containing high fat and protein. It can be taken out and then sold as a separate product. How delicious is cream? My husband loves to settle the milk. He brings fresh milk in every morning for his breakfast. He lets the cream settle on the top and he pours that onto his milk. And so that milk has always been standardised, and that's the traditional way of standardising milk. The permeate is a perfectly legal thing to do, and how that's actually come about is, obviously, Australians are crazy about cheese.
Yeah.
So we had more and more and more of this product being produced as part of the different types of processes to actually make Things like yogurt.
All right, I've got a million other things to ask you about, but Lorraine wanted to comment on the cream. Good morning, Lorraine.
Hello, Trev. When I was a kid, I'm 61 now, my girlfriend's mum always let the cream settle at the top of the bottle.
Yeah.
And she would make the most delicious ice cream.
Uh-huh.
And we always had ice cream from the milk bottle.
Right. Whatever happened to it?
Why don't they just do that now?
Why don't they do it now? Lorraine, thank you very much. It is Rod, not Trev, but that's all right. I remember that when milk came in bottles, there was the cream at the top and you had to shake it. And you make sure that the lid was on properly, otherwise the milk would go all over the room, the kitchen. What happened to the milk, the cream at the top of the milk?
These days it's homogenised. So it goes through a process where you are able to actually suspend the fat and protein in the milk. So it tends not to settle in the top of the bottles like that.
Were the milk with cream at the top was not homogenised?
That's right.
So what about also we got a text from milk straight from the cow. Is that legal?
No.
No.
Not in this country, no. Milk is very much a nutrient dense cocktail, and of course, you know, it's a wonderful food for young children over the age of 12 months of age.
Yeah.
So it's very important that what we feed our young people is as safe as it can possibly be, and a way of making sure of that is to pasteurize milk.
Okay.
So it's just a process that was invented, and it became illegal in the late 1950s to sell milk in Australia that was not pasteurised.
Okay.
It's just a safeguard.
And exactly.
It's wonderful to have that safeguard.
Let's talk about flavour in a moment, or now. Les in Maui is with us. Les, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Rod. And I didn't catch the lady.
Lynn Strong is our guest. Yes.
How are you?
The problem is that before they start bringing out all the media things about this
permeate.
Yeah. We used to buy the bottles from a certain supermarket that dealt in blue and white stripes on the cartons and blue and white on their label. I won't mention that in the supermarket.
Catch the story, Les.
Yeah, the thing was that myself being blind, I turn around and I've got relatively acute taste.
Yeah.
And just before they started to answer this, the milk started tasting almost like it was being strained through a mouldy rag. That was the sort of taste of it. This was the plain, stable milk that you would buy from the supermarket and what they reduced the cost on when they had the big price drop. It just seemed to have this mildewy, mouldy sort of aftertaste. We changed to another type of milk. With full cream in it, wasn't all that more expensive, and that taste wasn't there. But when we went to go back, we had a shortage of milk even though at one stage. We went back to the 2-litre bottle because that was the only available, and that taste that taste was still there.
Okay.
It hasn't been there now since they've stopped it because we did buy some 1-litre cartons at one stage of the standard milk from the supermarket,
okay. And
the taste is now gone. So obviously, if the permeate's not there anymore, well, that's obviously where the taste would have been added to.
All right, Les, thank you very much. And we'll use that as a kicking off to talk about that. Is that right? Does it taste different, Lynn?
Well, Choice have done a number of surveys in this area, and they did that around when the controversy came out on A Current Affair. And Today Tonight. So when they actually did the surveys, people actually when put under those conditions couldn't tell the difference between milk
right.
that contains permeate and milk that doesn't. That was standardised by taking out the cream.
Okay. What about where the milk comes from, where it's produced? The fact that it could be in different parts of Australia, does that make a difference to the flavour? Or when during the year it's produced?
Oh, look, most definitely. And often I'm sure the large processors actually get these questions as well. But if you talk to the smaller boutique processors, they'll say, certainly in spring, that people will ring up and they'll say that the milk tastes different at the present moment
yeah.
to what it did a month ago. And that can quite possibly be true because the flavour of milk is very much dependent on what the cows are eating. And the milk tends, and the grasses, for example, are much more energy in the spring. And the milk is higher in basically, I suppose you'll call it water content in spring, and lower in the fat and proteins.
Okay.
And that's just a result of the different types of pastures.
My father always reckoned he could taste when the cow had been eating clover.
Oh, yes. So clover has a different flavour to what ryegrass does, and the milk can often have a different flavour compared to in our area. And we notice that in our fridge because our cows are fed on a kikuyu-based pasture in the summer, and often an oats. And we've got two farms, and the cows on that farm eat what we call a nice mixture of salads where they eat chicory and clover and lucerne. So we find that the milk even tastes different from the two farms. So,
and also, definitely
can happen.
Different cows as well, whether they be Jersey or Friesian, Holstein.
That's right. So for example, Jersey cows genetically have higher components, and they have higher ratios of fat and protein compared to Holsteins, or we call them Holsteins. A lot of people in Australia call them Friesians, the black and white cows, because just through genetics, because Holsteins produce more milk, in liquid milk than Jersey cows do. So it varies with the cows. So that is quite a reasonable thing for people to say, that it tastes different at different times of the year.
All righty. On ABC Local Radio, you're with Rod Quinn, and Lynn Strong is our guest. We're going to take some more calls in just a moment. We're talking about milk this morning.
She's the fastest in the world! Black Caviar by 4 lengths!
From ABC Books comes Black Caviar.
I'm Helen Clare. How does the way you look affect your chances of getting and keeping the job you really want? This Sunday from 10, we'll be finding out about lookism. We'll also see how Margaret the Serial Hoarder is going with her treatment program. And I'm on the hunt for the next Sunday DJ, so I'll have a question for you in order to nominate you or someone else. Sunday from 10, straight after Macca, right here on ABC New South Wales.
A guest. We're talking milk this morning, and Roy is next. G'day, Roy. Roy, good morning. Okay, let's try Mark in Goulburn. G'day, Mark.
Yeah, good morning, Rod. How are you?
Yes, good morning. I'm well, mate. Very well.
That's why. It's actually, I'm in the Goulburn Valley.
Goulburn Valley, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Lynn, I'm 54. I grew up on a dairy farm. Got out of it about 10 years ago due to the drought. But I just wanted to bounce something off you. Now, as kids, we grew up and we drank milk straight out of the vat, and I have done most of my life. And over that period of time, over the 50 years, I suppose, I noticed that none of the people we were in contact with, family, local communities, etc., seemed to have illnesses and sicknesses like we do today, since they brought in all this pasteurisation and that. I'm just wondering, and I'll probably get shot down by the health profession, but those natural bugs and things that occurred in the milk straight out of the vat before this processing came in, I really believe that they helped build our immune system at a very young age and made us immune to a lot of, I suppose, for want of better words, diseases and things like that.
Okay, that is controversial. Mind you, milk's been pasteurised for more than 120-odd years, Mark.
Oh, well, it's all these processes. But do you see where I'm getting to, though?
Okay. Lynn?
Well, look, it's more the fact that 86% of Australians today live in our capital cities, and they don't get exposed to a lot of things. And this is and this is being scientifically proven. We sort of tend to live in very sterile environments these days, and so yes, people don't get the chance to build up immunity. But
the question is, how important is it that the milk is pasteurised?
It's really important. The thing that they're most concerned about is a bacteria called E. coli. And that can cause in small children who haven't built up an immunity to these types of things you know, it can cause quite serious diarrhea. Now, these days, you could go around to 99.9% of milk vats in Australia and they would definitely be E. coli free. That is the level of food safety on farms today. I know we've had our milk tested. There is definitely no E. coli in our milk. And so the majority of dairy farms across Australia would be exactly the same. It's just a way of making sure that you can put a product on the shelf that is definitely E. coli free and definitely safe for small babies. And that's the only reason they do it. It is just out of genuine concern that we actually have the ability to do it.
Yes, indeed. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that before the price was, I know that it's no longer cold, but dairy farmers, I've actually got friends who are dairy farmers. So just to support my friends knowing that what they get at farm gate for
yeah,
it,
right.
That's just what I buy, and, you know, my personal thing. But at the same time, milk is not milk. You get there, it's come out of the cow through two bits of filter paper into the vat, and you dip mug in that and drink that. That is milk.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, look, I don't want to get distracted or sidetracked on this. We are not here to talk about the whys and wherefores of pasteurisation or even homogenisation. We accept that, you know, what the government says is that milk should be pasteurised. We accept that what Lynn says is correct as well, is that that is designed. Now, people may have drunk from, you know, vats of milk straight from the cow in the past. That's their choice. We're not going to do it for the rest of society. And, you know, I think we need to move on from that. So I appreciate the calls we're getting, but we're certainly not going to keep talking about that. George, good morning.
Good morning, Rod and Lynn. I've actually just the other day bought firstly a carton of pasteurised milk, but the interesting thing about it was unhomogenised. So obviously you couldn't tell because it was in a carton like the old bottle with the cream floating on top. But obviously they're still available, although it's a bit hard to find. You had to get from a kind of more specialty kind of supermarket. But the question I really wanted to ask Lynn was in regards to milk from other animals, because I've also got a carton right in front of me, actually, of pasteurised goat milk, but it's got a sticker, and it is a sticker that they've obviously added on fairly recently, they didn't print it on the actual carton, called Naturally Permeate Free. So obviously this has caught on with other animals, and I wonder if Lynn has actually heard of this happening, and if she knows about the processes in processing milk from other animals, whether it's significantly different from that from cows.
All right, George, good question. What about goats in particular, Lynn?
Look, as we've mentioned earlier, labelling milk permeate-free is just a marketing tool. And I imagine people processing goat's milk are just worried that people would start to question whether their milk contains permeate or not. Now, obviously, being a dairy farmer and not milking goats, my expertise of the goat industry processing is zilch. But it would just be my personal opinion, and I may be proved incorrect, but that is just the industry assuring people that they don't add permeate to their milk.
Okay. It's almost like the way that some fast food places advertise Angus burgers, when 90%, I think, of the beef sold in Australia is Angus, isn't it?
Large percentage is, but the Angus breed in this country has been absolutely brilliant at marketing their breed.
Yeah.
They're a very together unit of people, and they've done it brilliantly.
Well, it makes it sound better than the others, when in fact it's, you know, it may very well be, but, you know, it's Angus. You know, you're eating a steak or a burger or whatever, it's bound to be Angus, probably.
I think it's a pride. When you put out a brand, it's a brand, and people can relate directly to, you know, I'm eating Angus. People see them out in the paddock. They're beautiful black cattle.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pride-driven thing. I think the best analogy to this controversy probably is, you know, people labelling their chicken meat hormone-free.
Right, okay.
Now, that's ridiculous. Hormones haven't been in chickens in this country for over 50 years.
Right.
But it's just a marketing tool because people are concerned about it.
But chickens have hormones, natural hormones.
Oh, natural hormones, exactly.
So not labelling them hormone-free is laughable. now, Robert in Melbourne, good morning.
Good morning, Tony and Lynn.
Okay, firstly, it's Rod. I don't know why people keep getting me mixed up with Trevor and Tony, because, yeah, but anyway, I appreciate your call, Robert.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that milk is milk, meat is milk, meat is meat, mm-hmm. and the cow is the one that standardises milk, which is good for us as humans. And meat is good for us as well. And there's a place for both. I mean, standardising milk for making cheese is different, and standardising milk for humans is different, but the cow is the one that standardised the milk for us. And so we are wanting taste, and we want nutrition out of milk.
Right.
Lynn is talking about, you know, cheese as well, and back in the 50s when we needed milk to be pasteurised, that's fine as well. We've got more products in the marketplace now which give us all these choices. But nutritionally, milk is being standardised by a cow to feed its baby because it's been found to be very nutritious. So,
yeah, what is the point you're trying to make there, Robert?
Well, I don't know that us being humans really know how to actually feed ourselves in 2012. But the cow is a natural animal that knows how to feed itself, feed its babies, and we have used...
Hang on, so I've got to find out. Are you saying we shouldn't be drinking milk?
No, I'm not saying we shouldn't be drinking...
I'm still trying to work out what the point is that you're trying to make there, Robert.
Milk is a very nutritious product.
Yeah.
And with us getting involved, it's become a different product in the last 50 years.
So you think it's a worse product or a better product? Well, certainly a healthier product.
It's a confusing product now because we've taken a product and then taken it apart and then put it back together.
Right. Okay. All right, Robert. Thank you very much for that. I think I understand what he means. Lynn, what do you make of that?
Well, just going back to the analogy that was used with cattle feeding their babies. So, for example... as we talked about, the fat and protein ratio in cow's milk varies with the seasons and the climate and the geography and so forth. Now, when it most varies is in spring, when the cow actually produces more milk and is diluting the fat and protein.
Yeah.
What actually happens when you've got a calf is the calf is also eating pasture. So the lower components in the milk, the cow's milk, is actually made up because the pasture is so much richer and more energy dense for the calf. So the calf is able to, because of the calf's diet, is able to get those nutrient levels balanced out.
Okay, a couple of texts. Julie says, on most dairy farms, do the calves get to suckle from their mother? And if so, for how long? Do you actually have calves on your farm?
Oh, yes. So on the home farm, we calve down all our cows. Now, what we do is the baby calves are removed from their mothers, and that's basically for health reasons. We like to ensure that they're in as healthier environment as they possibly can. So what we do is we remove the calves, and then what we do is we actually have a robotic feeding system. So each of the little calves has a little tag in its ear, and we're able to mimic the natural process. So those calves live on a really pristine bedding of pine shavings. We have someone on our farm who specifically looks after the calves. We've got a gorgeous lady called Louise whose sole job is to look after those baby calves. Mm-hmm. We have a nutritionist who makes sure that those calves are as healthy as possible. And we have the Sydney University who come in once a fortnight and do a complete health well-being inspection on our cows.
Okay. Another thing which comes from both Michael and Rebe, what is A2 milk?
Ah, yes. Now, there's another niche market product, and I'm really happy to...
It makes you smarter, doesn't it?
Sorry?
Doesn't it make you smarter?
Well, that's the point about this.
I think someone did a study and said, no, it doesn't.
Exactly. So the evidence for A2, and it's really important for people to realise, is all anecdotal. There is absolutely no recognized science to say that milk that only contains the A2 protein compared to regular milk, which contains a balance of A1 and A2 protein, is any healthier than that milk.
Right. So that is just trying to make a point of difference. And if they make people buy it because they think it's, you know, better or whatever, that's great. They've done their job.
Yes, that's exactly right. And it's important to realise we do have this plethora of different types of milk on the shelf. They're all nutritious.
Okay. What about flavoured milk? It's got sugar in it, I suppose.
Yes, it definitely has. But isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah, but, I mean, you get don't you get chocolate milk from brown cows, isn't it? No, I think that was right. I think that's right, isn't it?
Strawberry cows. Yeah, that's a great story we love to tell when kids come to the farm.
But hang on, it is true. Now, with chickens, I know you get white eggs from white chickens and brown eggs from brown chickens. That is true.
Oh, look, I've got...
That's what the bloke from the egg board told me.
And they, my silkies are all different colours. We've got black silkies. They all give me white eggs. So I think that's something to do with the genetics.
All right. Glenn, good morning.
Hey, you all right?
Fine, mate.
I had to... I must admit, I had to laugh when I saw this permeate-free.
Yes.
Came out in the first place. Mm. Because... Like, I don't fully understand how milk's produced within the cow and how it ends up in the udder, but surely the composition of milk within the udder would have had to come through some sort of filtration process within the cow's body to get into the udder.
Right.
So as soon as it exits from the teat, it is a permeate.
Yeah.
The whole of the product is a permeate.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot
Well, as we know, permeate is not a specific thing.
You cannot buy any kind of milk that's come out of an udder that hasn't been filtered somewhere within the body.
All right. Well, thank you, Glenn. We'll get Lynn to comment on that because, I mean, there is an understanding, though, of what permeate is rather than just the natural filtering that takes place within the cow's body.
Yes, and of course, as we said earlier, it's just a name for a combination of things that's gone through a filter. Now, I would imagine that, well, it'd be like a human body, that there are things, you know, like that are filtered within the body. So if you want to, there's no problem behind what's been said there. No, if it's been through a filter, what's come out is could be labelled permeate.
Okay, Jason, good morning.
Morning, Rod and Lynn. I'm enjoying the conversation. It's really good.
So am I.
Thanks, Jason.
I drink light white milk usually. I have done for a long time, and I was told once that light white has calcium added, and I'm wondering if that's true or not.
We have a lot of milks on the shelf that actually have calcium added, because obviously calcium is a very important component to reduce the amounts of osteoporosis. And so that in itself is another way of differentiating milk by adding calcium. Now, look, I'm not 100% sure of the process of making skim milk. Now, obviously, it's very...
But I think Jason's talking about light white as well.
Oh, sorry, yes. So light...
So we've got skim, light white, and full cream. Is there the same amount of calcium in light white, for example, as full cream? Do we know?
Unless it's labelled that it has extra calcium in it, yes.
Okay.
Because it's important for people to know how much calcium is in milk. So that would be on the back of the packaging as well.
All right.
So is the added calcium going to be beneficial to somebody, or is it just another marketing tool?
No, calcium...
Yeah, more calcium is better.
That's one of the great things of milk, that it has high levels of natural calcium. If you and osteoporosis, I know in my family osteoporosis genetically is a problem. So for me, it's important that I drink as much calcium as I possibly can. So if you are like me and in that position where you have a tendency to osteoporosis in your family, yes, it's a really good idea to go out there and buy milk with higher levels of calcium.
All right, Jason, thank you very much for that. Now, a couple of other texts, a lot of texts. What about organic milk? Is that better for us, or just something they stick on a label?
It's another marketing tool.
I mean, all milk's organic, really, isn't it?
yes, if you're using organic in that particular term. But organic labelling means that the product has been produced in a certain environment. So they're organic and in this country would to most people mean that there's been no pesticides used, for example, on the farm. Now, we don't use pesticides on our farm.
Okay, you so could label yours organic.
Out of our cows, what we do use on our cows, and I'm very pleased to say that if a cow on our farm gets sick, she certainly gets the best treatment that a human being does, so she will get antibiotics. That cow is taken out of the system, and the milk is actually tested to make sure that no antibiotics are going back into the milk, so she's completely taken out of the system. Animals in a organic environment produced under organic conditions, one of the things that the organic industry usually says, and it's not always the case, is that that animal has never had antibiotics. And I very strongly believe that all animals deserve exactly the same animal welfare and opportunities to lead a healthy life. So if one of our cows gets sick, she's going to get antibiotics if the vet says she needs antibiotics. Okay.
Another texter says, I believe the labelling is misleading and deceptive. The ACCC should have a look at it. It should state the exact ingredients and additives. You can taste the difference and makes better latte. My local Norco milk tastes great. I'm sure Norco is fabulous. Because it comes from one of the great dairy places in the world, the North Coast, New South Wales. Greg makes a good point. When or will we see GM products play a part in the quality of milk in the future via, say, the animal's feed? Is that already happening?
We guarantee Australian dairy farmers that our milk is not produced from grains that have been genetically modified.
Okay.
So at this stage in this country, we our cows are not fed genetically modified grains.
What I mean, but you genetically modify the cows in a way, don't you, by making sure that they're bred to be better? Like every generation of cow, hopefully, is going to be better than the generation before.
Look, and this is what is so exciting in the last 50 years. The level of technology and innovation is just phenomenal. So, for example, they have mapped the genome, the entire genome of cattle. So you're actually able to select by science a cow that will, for example, and on our farm, we're very focused on feed conversion efficiency.
Right.
The ability of the cow to turn grass into milk as efficiently as they can because it reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
Also, look, this might be, I don't know, we're getting right off the track here, but I mean...
Well, milk is so interesting.
It is. I find it fascinating. I drink a lot of milk. But, you know, with humans, you pretty much get 50-50 boys and girls. Now, you would want more cows than bulls, wouldn't you?
Yes, and that's another thing that that the industry is certainly focusing on at a science level.
How do you do it?
You are able to actually select. So it's got there is nothing more scientifically investigated, and there is no industry more innovative than the dairy industry in that you're actually able to sex the semen now.
You can.
Mm.
So you can make sure there's more cows and bulls.
Yeah, and that's the technology going forward. Yeah.
Okay. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. And who am I speaking to?
Yeah, you're talking to Rod, Michael.
And Rod, that would be Rod.
Thank you.
R-O-D.
That's right. And we've
got
Lynn.
I just sort of checked. Lynn, good morning.
thank you, Michael.
Lynn's a dairy farmer. And what are your qualifications, Lynn?
What are my qualifications?
Yeah.
I have a pharmacy degree.
Yep.
And I also have an advanced diploma of agriculture.
Well, that's excellent. Now, tell me if you can. Rod might know the answer to this.
I don't.
How many litres of milk are produced per day at the dairy? How many litres of milk are consumed per day by the consumer?
Oh, right.
And you'll never get the answer because you won't know how many litres they add to it by other things in the dairy. as in not your dairy.
Well, there's 9.65 billion litres of milk produced in Australia. The average consumer drinks 125 mils of milk per day, and that allows us to very accurately predict on our farm how many people that we supply with milk every day, and it's over 50,000.
Okay, so once the cows give milk in your dairy, what's added to it by the time it gets into the plastic bottles?
Okay, all right. As we've already noted, there's lots and lots and lots of milk products on the shelf. So the types of things, there's a dairy farmer's brand called Farmer's Best. They add omega-3 to that.
Okay.
As we know, omega-3 is really good for your heart. They can add calcium to milk. This is all done at the processing level. None of this happens on farm.
At your level, okay. Yes. So, but that hopefully is there detailed on the label. Halal milk or hormone-free, what about those milks?
Now, as you've already noted, that human beings have hormones, I'm not familiar with the Halal process at all. But as far as I know, that there is no specifications for producing milk in a different way for
Halal.
That market.
All right. Michael mentioned the amount of milk produced. There's a significant penalty if you produce too much. I find this stunning. What is that, Lynn?
Okay, so this is at the this is in the domestic milk market, and this is a strategy or a model that the processor Lion has adopted. Obviously, as I said, you know, drinking milk across Australia is fairly standard. Except there's lower amounts of milk drunk on the weekends and there's lower amounts of milk drunk in the school holidays.
Right.
So what they want from the farmer is they want a flat supply curve.
Okay.
And we've already explained that during spring when you've got really high quality grass, you know, cows produce a lot more milk.
Okay.
So what they've done is they have set the standard for farmers at the intake that they actually want in autumn. And so what they do is they punish you very severely for any excess milk that you might supply. So they tell you, they have this thing called, they call it the anticipated full demand. So they give you a contract where they pay you full price to supply that anticipated full demand. Now, it's impossible for a farmer, because the cow is a living, breathing thing, just like human beings, to actually supply milk on a flat supply curve. And you have a contract, you're not allowed to go below it to a certain level, you're not allowed to go above it to a certain level. When you do go above it, they punish you very severely. So your milk price can drop from 40 cents a litre to, as we mentioned earlier, 10 cents a litre.
Yeah, shocking.
The other major processor, Parmalat, does not do that. They have a model that reflects the biological makeup of the cow, and they have a blended price, and it's a fair market price.
All right. A mad cow that doesn't get into the milk somehow?
Absolutely not. That's the wonderful thing about this country, the incredible biosecurity we have. So it's just fantastic to live in this country and be able to know that you've got high-quality, nutritious food on the shelf.
We have 2 minutes to go. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Rob. One of the biggest concerns I feel is that permeate is the new name for whey, the byproduct of cheese making, but a lot of people don't know there's two-thirds more lactose in permeate milk than ordinary cow's milk, and this is why so many thousands of children now are developing lactose intolerant.
Okay, all right, that's interesting, Greg. Lynn, what do you make of that?
Yes, Greg is quite correct in that permeate contains the lactose. But the lactose, it's standard. When it goes back into milk, you're getting a standard amount. Like, lactose is just milk sugar. And for example, human milk has much higher levels of lactose than cow's milk. So the lactose is the sugar content is listed on the label. Lactose intolerance, what is happening in this country, there's certain ethnic groups that tend to have lactose intolerance.
Okay.
And obviously we've got a much higher ethnicity in this country.
All right.
This is why it's been noticed.
We have less than a minute to go. Lynn, I've got to ask you, if someone is walking into the supermarket, does it make any difference if they're buying permeate, permeate-free, whatever?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and what about long life milk?
Long life milk's been put through an ultra high filtration process. That's out of my expertise,
okay,
whether it's been made with permeate added or not.
Okay, I think I've seen those stickers though. Lynn Strong, thank you so much for answering all of our questions. I really appreciate it, and I hope you can get at least another half hour sleep before you have to get up and milk the cows. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. And I just want to tell everybody out there that milk is a wonderful product.
Okay.
And you can feel very confident
thank
that
you, Lynn.
It's still highly nutritious.